I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, we are back with, I think I've talked about one of my favorite podcasts and some of my favorite people, Beyond the Trope. And finally, we've managed to get them on the show. I do have some favorites, and luckily one of them is here with us today.
Yeah, that is. Today we are joined by Giles and Michelle from Beyond the Trope. Giles and Michelle, thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, this is going to be one of those things where John doesn't know how to address having two guests, and I'm going to like throw questions out there and not address it to a specific person, and you'll talk over each other, or there'll be 10 seconds of awkward silence. So get ready for that, everybody.
Sweet.
It's okay. Patrick knows how to edit.
That's the theory.
He does. And I'm sure he's like raised his fist and shaken it at me from Denver to New Jersey. Probably every week for the past 10 years almost. So there you go.
Hey, John, before you go too far down the road, I just want to say that this is very typical. This podcast recording today is very typical of the Denver author scene. The only way to get us, you know, to hang out together is to like record us separately from our own houses or get us to travel cross country to a convention.
True.
Right.
That's like it.
Yeah, there are people, I live in New Jersey, and there are a million authors that are in the tri-state area, specifically New York, that I have seen more frequently at conventions than I have only living, you know, a half hour from them. But that's how it works. It is interesting that this is the first time that we've had Giles and Michelle on, because I feel like Beyond the Trope comes up every other podcast of ours. Patrick mentions the show.
As long as the checks keep clearing. I'll keep mentioning.
Yes.
A little obsessive, huh, Patrick?
Wait, he's sending you text.
Giles, why don't you tell our listeners who maybe have not listened to the show a little bit about Beyond the Trope and what you guys do with your podcast?
Well, Beyond the Trope is kind of a podcast that we started to talk about the artistic side of sci-fi and fantasy, because we were kind of tired of literary snobs saying that there's no art. It's not high-quality fiction. And I think from there it evolved into talking about comics and cosplay and movies and video games. We've had all kinds of really cool guests on to talk about all those topics, including people who created the YouTube show LARPs the Series, which makes LARPing look like a lot of fun.
Michelle, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you got involved and maybe how, you know, beyond what Giles just said, like sort of your point of view on how things got started and where you guys are at.
Oh man, it was a total accident. Cause Giles and I met accidentally at a writer's convention like 7 years ago, and someone else talked us into joining a critique group together, and we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. If I had known, I probably wouldn't have gone. But after a couple of years, we were just hanging out one day before everyone else in critique got there. And Giles said, very casually, hey, we're having good conversations. Why don't we start a podcast? And I stupidly said, yeah, sure. That sounds easy and fun.
Podcasts are funny nowadays, because I was at a party a couple of months ago. And the guy that threw the party, to another person there, they were like, yeah, you got to start a podcast, man. And it was someone that did interesting things with their kids in the summer. They like took them someplace every day, and it wasn't kind of an interesting thing. But this one guy who I'm friends with, his point of view is like, podcast, easy money right there. Why don't you just like, you know, you whip that together and throw it out. And then, you know, they're like, he's like, John does a podcast. And I'm like, I do. And there's no money in it. So I don't know what you're talking about. I've been doing a podcast with my friend for 10 years. We started making a few dollars doing Patreon a couple of years ago. We basically did it at a loss for 7 years. And then, so my, which I'm sure you guys have talked about this before or probably mentioned it on your show, don't get into podcasting because you think you might make money. You do it because you may enjoy doing the podcast, and it has a lot of other benefits, but it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. That has been my experience. Michelle, what do you think?
What's rich, exactly? Mm-hmm. What is money? I don't think any creative person can really expect to make a lot of money with what they do.
No.
Especially not podcasting. Giles, what do you think?
Yeah, Giles, what do you
think? I think unless your name is Adam Carolla or Joe Rogan, you're not going to make a dime in podcasting that's worth putting towards a real project like rent or food.
Yeah, I think with, well, you know what, you know, we can get into this deeper as we sort of talk in our main topic, but I think there's so many podcasts, and I think you have to approach it because it's something that may add value to your life. And that value is probably not financial value. But I think it's something, podcasts are set up in a way where you, if you do them the right way, it's not, you can get into a good routine and habit where you're constantly creating them. And I think in that creation, that's satisfying. Patrick, what do you think? You're the one that puts out this podcast every week, and you've done lots of other ones. So what do you sort of get out of podcasting, whether it's something creative or something else out of it?
I get to hang out with people that I don't normally get to hang out with because life interrupts all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it, for me, it's fun to be able to talk to folks that I have met in person at conventions, have traded, you know, comments and chat with online via Twitter or Facebook, that kind of stuff. It's just fun, and it just brings the kind of, it's almost like the connective tissue for the community, right? We get to just keep building these online friendships.
Yeah,
which is a lot of fun. I you know, you and I started because we were trying to sort of build platforms for our careers. Mm-hmm. You as a musician, me as a writer, and to open some doors. And that really happened. I mean, that happened for both of us. We got some opportunities from podcasting that I don't think we ever would have gotten otherwise. You know, you got to do the Resnick thing. You got to do the Angry Robot stuff. I got to do some stuff like, you know, I got invited to write an essay for an anthology. I got open doors with agents and editors, stuff like that. That was all great. But I think if you kind of set out to do that, it's not going to work. It almost has to be organic.
Yeah. And I think at this point, I know for me, and I've said it before, the podcast, I do it for the podcast, and I've been that way with it for a while now, where it's not an ulterior motive to something else. And it's much better that way. And I certainly get out a lot out of it too. A couple of years ago, when I'd considered like, oh, maybe I just don't have the time to do this, or we have so much going on in life and I don't know if I should do this anymore. You know, my wife talked me out of it because she said like, oh, you're always in such a much better mood after you record, because you have these people that are really smart and really interesting, and you get charged up by having a conversation with somebody that's really smart and really interesting. Because let's face it, in our real lives, we don't, on a daily basis, we don't get to talk to people of that level. And I'm not talking about a fame thing necessarily, but just someone that, look, anybody that you have that's, if they wrote a book and they got it published, they probably have something to say, and they're probably a little smarter, a little more interesting than the average person that maybe you work with or is just someone that you'd see in your everyday life. So to have that opportunity to talk to people like that on a regular basis is what I get out of it at this point. I think it's healthy for everybody. So,
well, and I'm sure Giles and Michelle have their own opinions about this, but like I've been incredibly impressed with what they have accomplished in the last 5 years. And and specifically when, like, Giles mentioned the LARP stuff at the YouTube channel, and I forget their name at this point, but I'm just specifically talking about like Denver Comic Con, which they can't call it Denver Comic Con anymore. Now it's Denver's Pop Culture Con or something like that. You guys are huge there as far as I'm concerned. You're really involved, and I know it's a lot of work, and I know you're exhausted afterwards. But you get to do a lot of stuff there that other people don't get to do. And you do it really well. You do it really, really well.
Like I said, it's all an accident. I mean, I remember the very first, like, we hadn't even been a podcast for a month, Giles, before we first applied to Comic-Con?
I think I applied for it in March of our first year, and I thought, well, there's no way to say yes, so why even bother? And then I heard the Writing Excuses podcast in my ear saying, well, you bother because the worst they can say is no. And so I did it, and now look where we are 5 years later.
Yeah. I think that's kind of been our whole mantra, is the worst they could say is no, or just ignore us. So really, like, we should just ask whoever we want, and if they say no, well, okay, that's fine. They'll regret it later. But if they say yes, we just get to keep talking to cooler and cooler people.
Cool. Well, I want to get more into podcasting and balancing all those things in our lives. But before we do that, I want to take a moment to thank everybody that supports our show on patreon.com/functionalnerds. It really makes all the difference in the world. Again, we're not getting rich off of this, but it does help to not do this at a loss all the time. And more than anything, it encourages us to keep doing it, because we know there are people that value the show, and that makes a big difference. So for the people that are already backing us, thank you so much, Patrick, and I really do appreciate it. And I think all the people that we get on the show appreciate it too, because this is a platform for talking about books and, you know, authors coming on to promote their books. And even though there's a million podcasts, there's not that many that focus on this, that do it every week and have done so for 10 years. I know I'm tooting our own horn, Patrick, but I'll toot it because no one else is going to toot it. So there you go. Anyway, thank you for backing us. We really do appreciate it. If you enjoy the show every week and you're not one of our backers, just consider becoming one. Go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and that'd be awesome. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Michelle, why don't you tell us what your pick is this week?
All right, first I feel like I need to justify this, because I think a lot of people are going to hear this pick and be like, no, thank you. So I'm a seventh grade teacher, and we're teaching Animal Farm right now. And when I learned Animal Farm in middle school, I absolutely detested it and thought it was the worst thing ever. But now that I'm rereading it as an adult, it's actually hilarious. So my pick this week is reread Animal Farm as a grown-up.
That's something I've been thinking about doing for a while, Michelle. One of the podcasts I listen to, it's called Three Books with Neil Pasricha, and he has various authors on, and they talk about their three most formative books.
Uh-huh.
And someone chose Animal Farm on a recent episode, and it got me thinking. I'm like, yeah, that's probably a book that adults should read now, because it does seem pretty relevant to our time. And it seems like it's just, you really can't appreciate it fully as a kid, which is probably most books. You can't, but I've been thinking about that one recently too. So that's cool. Animal.
And so, Michelle, without being spoilery, mm-hmm. can you tell us why you think people should, I mean, you said it's hilarious, but like, what about it makes you think that adults should reread it?
It's, well, I think part of the problem is that a lot of teachers, at least in the past, have focused so much on it being an allegory for the Russian Revolution that they spend a lot of time saying, okay, so this person is Stalin and this person is Trotsky, and everyone's like, I don't actually care about this. And the whole fact that it's a satire and is telling so much of the story just tongue-in-cheek gets skipped over. So all of the fun parts are ignored to make sure everyone understands the allegory. And with my students, at least, we've just been focusing on, see how they're being sneaky? Nothing could possibly go wrong. And then in the next page, like, someone's murdered, and all of my students are like, what? What is going on? And also, it has the best, like, twist of an ending ever that I won't spoil, because Oh, it's so good when you reread it.
Better than The Adventures of Baron Munchausen?
I have no idea what that is, but sure.
Better than Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Oh, better.
Okay.
Wow. I always say that with reading, because I didn't read for pleasure until I was an adult. And I always feel like we should tell kids, it's like, hey, man, if you read books, there's like swearing and violence and like all sorts of good stuff right? that adults are kind of okay. Like, we're going to give you a hard time if that comes up in a movie or something like that. But, you know, in a book, we'll be okay with it. So it's a way for you to experience all this naughty stuff that we generally frown upon. But if it's in a book, we're okay with it. Or right? maybe your parents don't read, so they'll not even know. So yeah, go read stuff, kids.
I was telling some students, because, you know, the movie The Martian came out recently and it was a book first. And a lot of people are like, wait, what are books? And I was telling them, no, you need to read this book. It's amazing. And my students were like, no, it's not. And we happened to have it on our classroom bookshelf, which maybe not the most appropriate for seventh graders. But I pull it out and I just show them the first page because the first line is so fantastic. And I just showed it to them. I'm like, really? You don't want to read this? And they're like, what? He's cursing on the first page? Yep.
Isn't the first sentence like I was fucked or something? Like
yeah,
that?
Pretty much. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I don't want to get on a whole jag on this, but to talk about the difference between a point that I've thought about in the past week with books versus a TV show or a movie. I read that Marie Kondo book a couple of weeks ago, before the mm-hmm. Netflix show came out, because it was on sale on Amazon maybe a month ago, and I bought it and I just moved. So I'm like, this seems like an appropriate time to read a book like this. So I read it and enjoyed it and used some of the things I learned in it. And I mean, that was a big book, which I've been hearing about for a couple of years now, as everybody has. But sure, now a show pops up on Netflix and everybody I know in the world talks about it now. It's like, I'm probably feeling snooty and superior, but it's like, come on, everybody. Like, that book was available for a long time. You could have read it. Like, but I understand. But anyway, we don't need to get into a big conversation about Marie Kondo. But it is TV and movies do just reach more people. It's just the ease of doing it. But go read the books, everybody. That's Giles, what is your pick this week?
Well, a lot of people who listen to our show are going to know that I'm a huge Fallout fan. So listeners might be kind of surprised that I'm not recommending Fallout 76, but anybody who's been following that game might know why I wouldn't be promoting it. Really, I want to talk about Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
It's a really awesome game where you just ride around. Oh, I mean, it's Rockstar Games, so they made Grand Theft Auto. So just think of Grand Theft Horse. You're kind of a cowboy. You go out hunting, and I guess there are missions and stuff, but I spent most of my time hunting animals and building up my bow and arrow collection.
Nice.
Yeah. I listened to a lot of audiobooks with my dad growing up that were Western in theme, or a lot of Louis L'Amour stuff. So I just kind of love that era and that setting, and getting to play games in that world has been a lot of fun for me. So it's been a nice break from a lot of the tedium of going to school and starting a new job. And it's been just something that I think everybody should go pick.
Very cool. When I log in occasionally to my PS4, I see that you're playing.
Yeah, it's. I was playing it this morning before we started this recording.
Da, da, da.
Patrick, what is your pick, Patrick?
Well, since Michelle decided not to do multiple picks, I'll go ahead and do multiple picks. the first one is a Netflix documentary, and it's called The Bill Murray Stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man.
I'm interested in this one, so I want to hear your take on it.
You should definitely watch it. It's very interesting. It also triggered me to go out and buy. I have not started it yet. I have not read it yet, but I went ahead and bought it for Kindle. The Tao of Bill Murray.
Nice.
And it basically talks about, I don't know if you have ever heard about the phenomenon, but Bill Murray randomly shows up places.
I've heard it, like, he'll show up at someone's wedding, or he'll see people like in the park or something.
And he just walks up and starts talking to them. Yes.
Yeah.
He He appeared in a couple's engagement photos because he happened to be walking down the street and kind of walked over and started making faces at them as they were trying to look like a loving couple and stuff. And so the photographer couldn't figure out why they were freaking out. And he turns around, sees Bill Murray standing there and says, well, why don't you just get in the photos with them? And so he gets in the photos with them.
That's so cool.
He has shown up at like house parties. He'll be walking through the neighborhood and someone's having a house party and he'll just go in and grab a beer and start talking to people.
That's awesome.
Someone, and these are all, you know, part of the documentary a little bit. So it is a little bit spoilery, but like there was a guy who was having a house party. They do it every year. They got to be friends with a band that was playing that night. They invited the band to come and play at the house. The band shows up and their roadie for that night was Bill Murray. He had met the band, liked them, and for whatever reason decided to be their roadie that night. And he was helping carry their stuff into the house for the party. And then he sat there playing a tambourine with them as they were playing songs.
Of course he did.
And I mean, just stuff like that. And there's stories about how someone will be having a party. They'll go into the kitchen and there's Bill Murray doing the dishes because they ran out of glasses. And so he just kind of does this all the time. And then the thread of the documentary is talking about his, if you look at his movies, he kind of has the same sort of messaging throughout all of them. And it's kind of about life and about how you interact with other people and what does and doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really interesting.
I'm interested because I've been thinking about this a lot lately with creative people, and we usually put them in a box. And for Bill Murray, it's like, oh, he's the Saturday Night Live guy. And then he was in a bunch of funny movies and he was in Ghostbusters and yay, Bill Murray. And then if you pay attention to Bill Murray's career, he tends to pick projects that are more artistic. Rather, yeah. I mean, it's often funny anyway, but I think he's really led by a spirit of creativity and artistry. And I think many people are creative in that way and do have more sides than we as an audience want to give them. And so, yeah, I'm curious to watch that doc because of that, because I'd like to know a little bit more about him and how that all kind of plays out.
Well, and in a very un-Hollywood way, you also learn that Bill Murray has no agent.
Oh, right.
He has no manager.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
He has an 800 number.
Are you serious?
Yes, he has an 800 number. And so, for example, John, you were talking about the things that he picks. If you remember, there's a movie called Lost in Translation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good movie.
Sofia Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
How she contacted him was she got the 800 number from a friend of a friend and she called and left a voicemail and she just assumed that he was going to take the part. She wasn't sure. She never got a confirmation, went to Japan to start filming, with fingers crossed that he was going to show up and he did.
Yeah.
Has no agent. He has no manager.
I gotta watch that again because I watched that around the time that it came out, and that's like a young Scarlett Johansson. That's one of her.
Yes.
That's probably her first big role. I'm sure she did things before that, but that was kind of what put her on the map. And she was quite young then. Like I think she might have mm-hmm. still been a teenager at the time. She might have been like 18 or 19 years old or something.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting documentary. It's on Netflix right now. Highly recommend it. It gives you a completely different perspective of Bill Murray that you may not have ever even considered before. And that's what made me decide I also want to read the book, The Tao of Bill Murray. So I went ahead and grabbed that. The other one that I'm just going to throw out there because it's been amusing the hell out of me is the Try channel on YouTube.
What is that?
It's a channel where Irish people try things.
Oh, I love that channel.
Those are hilarious.
So many of those videos. I go down such a rabbit hole.
It is a total rabbit hole. It's like I sent Giles the shit Southern women say, and I think you also got kind of hooked on that one a little bit. But yeah, the Tri Channel. These are Irish people trying American things, which is hilarious. Like they have tried spicy beef jerky, you know, American beef jerky. They tried America's strongest alcohols, including moonshine. That one was, I was rolling laughing at that one. So that if you're just looking for something to while away a couple of hours of your time while you're laughing your butt off, go check out the Try Channel and just see some of the stuff that they've tried. When they, anything American that they try, like especially candies and chocolates, they're just like, oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. And then, you know, when they try the alcohol, those are just the best because of their reactions to things that they're trying.
That's awesome. Cool. My pick, I'm going to pick a book this week. This has come up, and I think I mentioned on a recent episode that I was reading it, but I finished it and loved it. This is one of those books where I had the ebook, and I was about halfway through it, and I just was not, because I always read like three books at a time, I was not moving as fast through it as I would have liked, and I've had a bunch of Audible credits building up. And I was about halfway through the book and I'm like, oh, let me just buy the audio book. And then that way I can just kind of move ahead with it. And of course, then I blew it out in like a week. But this book is Kings of the Wild, W-Y-L-D, by Nicholas Eames, E-A-M-E-S. And this book has come up before, I believe. Rob Bedford mentioned it on a recent episode. I've certainly mentioned that I wanted to read it. It is fantastic. I loved it so much. Everyone told me I was going to love it, and they were all right. It is a very traditional Dungeons and Dragon-y kind of fantasy novel, using metaphors that would apply to 80s hair metal. So you can see why people were recommending this book to me. John, this dude wrote this book for you. And you would think that's like, well, how does that work? And it's not as odd and weird as you think. It's not like there's some weird time travel thing where Motley Crue shows up in some medieval setting or something. It wasn't anything like that. But, you know, the mercenaries, they're bands of mercenaries. So they're called bands, as and each guy has their role in the band. And it sort of makes the parallel between a rock band and a band of travelers. So, you know, you have your wizard and you have your, you know, your thief.
Does the wizard need food?
You're making a reference to something that I don't know. So I'd
gauntlet.
Oh, wizard, right. Needs food. You know what? Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. It is that sort of 80s kind of thing. The wizard's name is Moog, like the Moog keyboard, like M-O-O-G, like from, you know, all that. And they're from a town called Coverdale, like David Coverdale from White's. There's all these like little kind of things peppered in, but it's just a really well-written book with a great sense of humor. And it's, if you like those sort of, and even though I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, it does read like a Dungeons and Dragons type of adventure. But he does fill out the world and do some pretty nice world building along the way. And it's anything positive you've heard about this book, I back it up 100%. I really liked it so much so that I went right to book two, which is a different set of characters set a little bit after the first book, but related to the first book. And that I'm about halfway through that one already too. And it's great. So I really dug it. So again, Nicholas Eames, Kings of the Wild. That is my pick this week. All right. Now, what we were going to talk about today is balancing our creative projects and our work life. So Michelle, maybe you can tell us how you go about doing that, balancing the various projects you do and your work life. You've already mentioned that you're a teacher. So how does that work?
Mm-hmm. I actually was talking with some coworkers about this yesterday, because in the teaching world, it is sadly very common that we have to have double or triple jobs in order to pay the bills. And one of the psychologists that works with us was like, yeah, I'm looking at getting another job. Does anyone else here have another job? And I said, kind of. Because podcasting is a job and writing is a job, but I don't really get paid for either of them. So can you call it a job? And then I had to explain myself It took like 20 minutes to be like, well, on Saturdays I do this and this and this and this. And I don't even know how I balance. I don't even know if I balance them, actually. I just try to do the things whenever I have time to do the things.
Yeah, I think about that because even though I don't do the kind of creative things that I did a few years ago, I never really considered them a job, because when I say think of job, I think of something that's you work to make money. But at the same time, I bristle at the term hobby. And mm-hmm. anytime someone refers to some creative pursuit as a hobby, it deeply offends me. And I know that's maybe me being too sensitive about it, but I feel like the word hobby demeans what you do, whether it's
what if you say that you have the you have what you need to do in order to pay the bills, and then you have your passions.
Yes,
that sounds
that's
better.
Fine. I just don't like the word hobby. Like I think of it as a pursuit, maybe, or just a practice that you're in, or just something. I just hate the hobby. To me, is a collection of trains, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not
what kind of trains.
Well, it really depends. You can have your Lionel trains, you can have your Thomas the Tank. Well, there's all sorts of trains that you can have. But that's a hobby, and that's cool. And you know what? I'm sure someone that's super into that is like, well, I don't think it's a hobby, because like I make my own tracks and I, you know, whittle figures that are on the side. And you know what? That person's probably right. Hobby's kind of a loaded term to me. And I think if you're an author or a creative person of some kind, to call what you do a hobby, I hate it. Even if you never make a dime doing it, don't call it a hobby. I don't know. Anyway, what do you think about that, Patrick?
I think you're right. Yeah. It's not a hobby. It's something else that you're doing. It's a passion that that you have. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know Michelle and Giles fairly well, and I know that they are passionate about a lot of different things. You know, Giles was very passionate about brewing beer for a long time. Michelle is passionate about her writing and the podcast. I don't know if you know this, John, but she actually does what you do for Beyond the Trope. She contacts the people and she schedules them and does all the wrangling. So
yeah,
well, you guys have more in common than you think.
Wow.
You're both teachers. You're both wrangling cats for podcasts.
We just wrangle cats every day of the week then.
Yeah.
Yes. That's my life. I didn't sign up to take care of, I don't feel like I'm necessarily built to be in charge and taking care of children all week, but yet 20 years in, that's what I've been doing for most of my adult life. Giles, what do you think about all this? What weigh in? What's your opinion on all this stuff?
I think you're right that calling it a hobby can be fairly insulting, but I think a lot of it comes down to how the individual perceives what their end goal is too. Like Patrick said, I was really into homebrewing for a while, and I would call that a hobby. I never wanted to be a professional brewer. And sometimes I thought, yeah, I would love to win a couple of like homebrew competitions or something. But for the most part, it was something that I did to relax and give myself a brain break when I was stressing out about writing. Writing and the podcast, I think, are a little bit more than a hobby. But at this point, my end goal is to continue to achieve better quality products out of both, whether it's a better book or a better podcast experience for our listeners. It's not necessarily something that I see long-term as a career path. If it becomes one, that's awesome. And I'm going to continue to pursue opportunities along those lines. But overall, what I can get out of it is just kind of figuring out how I can do better at them. So yeah, I wouldn't call them a hobby per se. But it's not quite I am passionate about it too, but I'm not sure where I would draw the line between hobby and passion. Because if you're not passionate about your hobbies, what's the point?
With the hobby thing, I think there's the other side of it too, where you meet people and you could be one of these. And while it sounds like I'm being critical of folks, let me put it out there that I have occupied both ends of the spectrum where I've been the jerk on either end. And that's the person that takes it really seriously to the point where it's not healthy and they're not making any money doing it. And look, you don't need to make money to validate what you're doing, but that's what that person wants. They want to be validated for their art. And I think all of us do to a certain extent, but you can go so far with it and where you become kind of insufferable. And I was certainly like that. I hope I'm not like that anymore. I became aware of being like that at one point. But it's, I think it, as I think everybody is mentioning here, it is finding whatever balance works for you and for the people around you. And something that I've learned in the past couple of years, and for the most part, I've dropped doing a lot of my creative things because of it. It's that you do have your job. And in Michelle and I's case, that is our teaching life. And you probably have a family or loved ones that you need to be there for. And in my case, that's my wife and my son. And this is a stoicism thing that I'm that I've talked a lot about over the years, but it's don't botch the job in front of you. And the job in front of you is your actual job and your responsibilities to your family. And if you're kind of living in your fantasy world of being, trying to be a successful author, singer, songwriter, what have you, and you're being a douche to your family and being an ineffective teacher in my case, that's not doing anybody any favors, and you just are doing every job poorly. So there is a balance, but at the same time, if you're not doing those things that you're passionate about, and you're just a hollowed out husk, that's no good either.
Well, and it's difficult, and I know that Giles and Michelle have been on probably the exact same panels that I've been on at conventions. Hey. Hey, I haven't even met you in person yet. Don't you bark at me. Anyway.
Sorry.
It's been quite an
I know that, like, there, if you talk to enough authors, and I don't know if you've made this connection, John, but if you talk to enough authors, they'll tell you that they're on the same four panels at every convention across the country.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the podcasters. Mm-hmm. You know, we basically get put on the same panels, and I feel a little bad and guilty because a lot of times you'll have people in the audience who are talking about, you know, the main question is, how do you make money on a podcast? How do you make money? Because I want to make money. I want to build a career. I want to do this and that. And to Giles's point, if you're not some big name person,
yeah,
the odds of you making money podcasting are very, very low.
Right.
You'll be lucky, and we count ourselves lucky.
Yes.
If you make enough money to, like, pay for hosting and cover some of the core costs, and so you're not bleeding anymore.
Right. Yes. And again, the point I make to people is it took us 7 years of doing it before we got to that point. You know,
well, but to be fair, two of those years were me going, John, we should do a Patreon. John, we should
That's
do a Patreon.
That's true. Okay. So,
John, we should do a Patreon.
It was, yeah, I think we figured it out that from you badgering me, I signed up for it. And then it was, I think, a full year from the time that I signed up for it that we actually, like, put it into practice. So yes, I will take the blame for dragging my feet on it. But that's the point.
Giles, any correlation there with anything you guys have done?
I think we all kind of dragged our feet on starting a Patreon, in large part because we were all equally invested. We wanted to make sure we were doing this right. So we did start an official LLC. And I think it took us longer than it probably should have for us to make that decision. But in the end, it's worked out for us so far. We just probably waited 2 years longer than we should have.
Yeah.
That seems to be a
common thing. And I feel bad for Michelle's dog. Michelle, what's your dog's name?
Her mic is muted.
Her mic is probably
muted. Oh, she might have heard.
Oh, sorry. Giles, I muted my mic because she was dogging. She was barking.
Yeah. What's her name?
Del, or Ghirardelli, technically.
Okay. Obviously, she's super excited because she hears my voice.
She actually doesn't.
All puppies love
me. Because I'm wearing headphones.
Oh, she hears it.
Oh, okay. Wow.
All puppies love me. That's the problem.
She just knows. Is that why she just ran out of the room?
Yes.
Yeah, usually in the morning she's really quiet and I wasn't worried, but now she's just being a turd, which is why we call her Turd Bucket sometimes.
Nice. So, John, there's nothing... So just so you understand, like, where Michelle fits in the science fiction, writery, fantasy, and actually in all authors kind of mixes, you get a good group of authors sitting around and we're all talking about our cats, and then Michelle has to talk about her dog.
Oh, weird.
I mean, yeah. My dog kind of acts like a cat sometimes. Like, she doesn't always want to be pet or cuddled. She wants it on her terms. And if you do it the wrong way, she gives you this look like, how dare you? How dare you?
But Giles, on the other hand, more appropriately, does have a cat.
Mm. I'm
by marriage.
Yeah,
by marriage.
He just wants a dog.
Yeah.
So there, I've kind of taken us down a weird path, but I still think it all goes back to the passion versus, you know, there's just the stuff you have to do, and then there's the passion stuff that you want to do. So you make time for it, and I think for it might be slightly easier for Michelle and myself. Michelle, I believe, is single. I'm single. That means that, like, we don't have a spouse that we have to make a deal with.
Truth. Makes it so much simpler. You just do whatever the heck you want.
You just do what you want, yeah.
The side effect, though, is that when I'm trying to make a deal with my wife, she usually goes and hangs out with Michelle. So it's kind of a balance there.
That is true, yes.
And John, I think you usually have to make some sort of deal with your wife, right?
I used to. I tried to live in such a way where I don't really do that anymore. I try to make things fit in the schedule that is presented. Because I used to do that all the time. It would be a, can I have 2 hours to work on this? And I did that for years, and I hated that interaction. You know, I didn't like I don't want to spend time with you. I'd rather spend time doing, and I'm not saying that's how it's going to work for everybody. And that's not necessarily the feedback that I got, but it's how I eventually felt. And it felt bad doing that. And it felt bad feeling that way. So I try to, and a lot of it has just been cutting a lot of things out and not taking on certain things either. I think that's the other thing that we all have to battle, as Patrick mentioned about the, we should do a side podcast like that. And it's, we say no to them, not because we think they're bad ideas. It's just because you know how much time these things take. And if you're already maxed out, you really can't say yes to these other projects. Now, something may come along where you're just like, that's where I want to spend time and I will make time for that. But sure. That's a big part of it too, is saying no to things.
Where I look at this whole thing and kind of judge success, and success is almost an arbitrary term here. I'm not talking about, you know, monetary success. I'm not talking about popularity. I'm talking about, you have successfully balanced the, you know, your work, your passion and family and anything else that kind of comes up. That to me is success. The people who have achieved that success are also the ones who communicate really well with everybody.
Agreed.
Because that's the key. You have to communicate. You know, if you're married, you have to say to your spouse, look, there's this thing that I'm very passionate about. And unfortunately, it's a very singular pursuit. You know, it's me sitting in front of a computer writing, as an example. That's not something I can really do with you. You can be in the room. But it's something that I have to do, and I'm really passionate about it, and I want to do it. I also want to spend time with you. So, you know, let's plan a trip this weekend, a day trip, or let's do this or let's do that. And they communicate that really well, and they make sure that, to your point, John, that other person understands that this is not a either or. This is a, I need to do this. This is my creative outlet. I have to do this. This is my passion. And I want to do this and also spend time with you. How can we figure that out?
Yeah. And that's, I think you're right, Patrick. I think that's the key there. That's the key. Well, so yes. There. Well, I have no idea how long this podcast is going to be between the stitching together. But if you've listened to this podcast and it seems seamless, you know, send Patrick a congratulatory tweet or Facebook message, because
or just money.
Yeah, because this podcast can be like 50 something minutes, or it could be 31 minutes. Like, I don't know how much he's going to have to edit out between the various tech issues that we've had. But Patrick, once again, thank you for all the work you do, because I do have an inkling of what you have to do to put this out every week. And I am always grateful. But if I don't say it on air enough, I'm saying it again. So thank you for all of that work that you do.
I appreciate that. And if you truly mean that, you'll get me some cookies from Beth Cato.
All right, I'll do what I can. I'll get Beth on the horn. Michelle and Giles, thank you for coming on the show. Michelle, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find stuff about Beyond the Trope?
Oh, everywhere. You can find our website that is in really sad need of updating at beyondthetrope.com. You can find all of our podcasts on Libsyn, Stitcher. We're on, oh my gosh, what's it called? Spotify. I was like, it starts with an S. It's the thing everyone but me uses. and we're on Facebook and Twitter.
They also have, do you guys also want to share like your other accounts that are not Beyond the Trope? That are Twitter?
Are like personal ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. My Twitter is at Redactionnaire, which is kind of a mashup of French and English. It's REDACTIONAIRE.
That's easy to remember.
I know, right? Redactionnaire. Person who loves editing.
And Giles, what's yours?
I just followed Michelle. Woo. There you go. Yes, I wasn't following her, so there you go. You are following.
That is that sounds super creepy.
Super creepy. Yeah, sorry. That's what they call it on Twitter. What do you want me to do?
And Giles?
You can find me at Giles Hash. Both of our personal Twitter handles are in the Beyond the Trope Twitter handle as well. It's part of the description of who
I'm
we are.
I'm assuming he's saying bio.
Yeah, bio. Yeah, bio. That.
Oh, man, Patrick, when you edit all of this, you should just cut out Giles's audio and replace it with whatever you want to say.
I'll go into the archives and I'll find some audio of John DeNaro going, hi-o! So yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I'm glad that we finally got you guys on. If you haven't been paying attention, I do talk about Beyond the Trope occasionally, and I think you guys are doing great work over on your podcast.
Thank you.
You've had some really great episodes that I've been a part of. And
you have been the highlight, that's true. The only bright spot in a sea of darkness.
And they got some changes going on over there. So you need to go and check it out and see all the new stuff that they're doing. There's my spiel.
Ooh.
Cool. All right, everybody. Patrick, anything else you want to mention before we
Probably.
Go?
Probably. I just don't remember what it was. So obviously it wasn't that important.
All right. Well, have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sunsmoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.